Things messed up. Hello?
It's 7 p.m. Thursday, and this is All About Wine. With All About Wine's resident wine expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
First, we were talking last week about Asian wineries and Asian grapes. We're going to finish up Australia today. That's what we're doing with the France. So we're continuing with France. Nice. Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly. Mike and I were talking about is the possibilities of hooking up with different wineries in different states and finding out what's going on. Sounds like it might be a whole lot of fun.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Organic Farm on the coast of Maine near Mount Desert Island.
Westport Rivers, Westport Mass.
HaberHill.com.
The Napa Valley of the Midwest.
RainbornWines.com in Santa Rosa.
Ten Spoon in Montana.
Alba Vineyards.
We're the largest estate vineyard in New Jersey.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery, New Jersey's top-rated winery for 2011.
India Vineyards on Route 93 is the main highway coming right up the center of New Hampshire out of Massachusetts.
Bebach Winery,
we are actually the highest-rated red wines in New Mexico.
Well, Southwest Wine is actually located in Deming, New Mexico.
Well, La Viña is the oldest winery in New Mexico.
Castello di Borghese, the first winery established in Long Island.
Flathead Lake Winery, and we're located at Cushier Park in Montana.
Mammoth Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Brotherhood is America's oldest winery since 1839.
Ithaca, New York, College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
The website is freethegrapes.org.
All right, grab a phone and let's talk about wine tonight. Dial area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. All right, let's start the show and let's talk about wine.
Wow, very nice opening. You did a good job on that.
Unbelievable. You know,
yeah.
Some of this stuff, that one took me about 3 days off and on. I was working for it for the past 3 days, and for 2 minutes and two seconds for the volume.
I showed 208 on my time clock here. So,
okay, look up two tracks from there. It says intro 2011.
I see. Okay,
I keep track of my stuff on there.
I see. Yeah, it is. It's 2 minutes, 2 seconds. Yeah. What
three
are these
days,
other two? Oh, those are the other ones.
Those were the old ones. Yeah, I need to delete those. But we also have a new sound, just in case things go a little like if we're talking about a state that just doesn't sound like it's all there. We can do this. Yep, a little cuckoo. So anyway, we're adding to our repertoire, and that was the new intro. You'll probably hear that. Until the next time I have 3 days off in a row. So
and then you start playing with something else, yeah.
Yes, but thank you all, the guests that have been on the program and made this that much more than what it – I mean, it's incredible. I mean, it's just to have the actual guests from the actual wineries on the program. And we have two guests tonight. So Ron wants to do the intro piece, and I'll get our first guest ready to go in the queue and – it's all about wine. Give us a call if you'd like to get on the air with us. 646-727-3235 is the number to call. And that is toll-free if you are in the 646 area code. Long distance for everybody else.
Everybody else.
So there you go.
Yeah, good opening, though, Mike. That's nice. It's really cool to hear all those different wineries we've talked to. It's just absolutely amazing.
And there's plenty more that I could have put in there, but I only had 3 days, so.
Yeah, and you know, we don't want the opening to take 15, 20 minutes.
That's true.
Yeah. We start getting all the wineries. We talked to so many of them. We don't.
I know. There's a ton of them. So, yeah, it's really cool, though. So we just had to put those on there, and thank you all very much for appearing on the show. So.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And we got, like you said, a couple more today.
Yeah.
Well, Mike is going to go grab our first guest. I'm going to talk about a couple of things. If you are not watching and keeping up with our All About Wine BTR, and that's the Facebook page for All About Wine, All About Wine BTR, I put a little teaser on there. My little teaser say, and you can become, you can like us on that. We've got 20 people on there now. If you're listening, go like us on All About Wine BTR. Become a Facebook fan of us. But I put a little teaser on there saying wine to run your car. Can it be possible? It's going to happen. Let me read you just about a paragraph here, if that much, about what they're looking at. It says, imagine pulling up to a gas station, and rather than being offered the usual choice between regular or premium unleaded, the gas pump instead reads Chardonnay or Pinot Noir. Not for you, of course, but for your car. And it says, the new experimental cars out there, the Lotus Essage 270E Tri-Fuel. If it ever catches on, this could not be a far-fetched idea. The experimental car is capable of running on ethanol fuel made from wine that isn't up to drinking grade. Or whey also can be used, which is also a byproduct of the cheese and chocolate making process. It was one of several cars showcased at the recent Eco Rally sponsored by the Prince of Wales and other organizations. The car can run on conventional gasoline, just in case you're out of fuel and still miles away from wine country, as well as methanol, a fuel that can be made by extracting CO2 directly from the atmosphere. Potentially the ultimate carbon neutral fuel. The car is also capable of reaching 60 miles per hour in less than 4 seconds, making it one of the fastest road legal cars in the world. So this is something that we can start looking at here, that a car that will run on not so good wine. And I'll tell you what, you let that wine sit around too long, you don't drink that, you put it and let it sit too much in your refrigerator or something, that's the wine that needs to go into your tank. So instead of throwing it away anymore, we can just save it up and start dumping it into our gas tank. That is if you go out and buy yourself one of these Lotus 270E tri-fuel concept cars. There's a video on YouTube at YouTube/watch?VGWQUTMLJ3HU. I will put that on the All About Wine BTR site, our Facebook site, so you can check out this video if you want. We have our guest with us tonight. I see we have Margot Sue Bittner from the winery of Margam Manor. And I talked to Margot a little bit earlier today. And Margot, I said, we'll talk about your vineyards and all that. And Margot corrected me and says, no vineyards. We do not do vineyards. We do fruit wines. And I said, that's great, because lots of people do. So, Margot, are you there with us?
I certainly am. Good evening.
Good evening. Thank you for joining us this evening on All About Wine. So tell us about the winery at Margam.
Yes, the winery at Margam Manor is located in Appleton, New York. My husband has a 600-acre fruit farm, and he was selling the fruit to different places to make their fruit wines, and we took the plunge and started doing it ourselves. So we make wine from peaches and pears. We have 3 different cherry wines, currant wine, all kinds of interesting things.
Wow. Well, then you started to tell us about the wine. Tell us about the wine. You know, I'm trying to find your website here, and I'm having a heck of a time doing it.
Well, the name Margam comes with a blending of my first name, Margo, and his Jim. So it's MARJIMMANOR.com.
There we go.
Website. And we start with wines like our very dry currant, which is a rich, heavy wine with a touch of strawberry in it. We have a wine made from Mount Morenci cherries, so it tastes just like cherry pie in a bottle.
Whoa.
A pear made in heaven starts like a German Moselle. It ends with that Bartlett pear taste. It was actually done originally in honor of our 25th wedding anniversary.
Wow.
So many of my wines also have a story behind the label. We have a cute wine called Appley Ever After. Many brides and grooms seem to like when we do weddings for them here. Peach for the Stars. We also have some wines that we've blended grape and fruit. So, for example, I have a wine called Thursday Afternoon at 3, because according to the ghost story, that's when the doors burst open and people die. My winery was actually featured on Ghost Hunters as well.
Oh.
So we have a little bit of fun with naming our wines and trying our wines, and we like to say a good wine is one you like, and we have wines for every palate.
Wow. I'm looking at your wines here. There's some cute names on there. I love that. So you grow all this fruit yourself. Everything comes from your farm.
Right. My husband grows the tree fruit, And then what we do is we sell the tree fruit to other people who want to make fruit wines, and I buy in their grapes to do my grape wines. So it's all hand-in-hand with other Niagara County wineries.
Oh, okay. And are you you are in that Niagara County AVA then?
I'm actually just north of it. I am right along Lake Ontario. The AVA itself is the escarpment, which is Niagara Falls, which goes right down the middle of the county. I'm a little bit north, and we actually are applying for our own AVA right now, right here along Lake Ontario.
Really? Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yep.
So...
yeah, there are actually 14 wineries on our wine trail right now. And there are six of us that are right here up in this area along the lake.
So that's the AVA you're trying to get there. The Lake Ontario AVA then?
Correct.
Okay, and that's going to go what, from, right outside of Niagara-on-the-Lake to Rochester? I mean, something like that?
Well, we're hoping, at least on the American side, yes.
Yeah.
Niagara-on-the-Lake is in Canada.
Oh, I see it is. You're absolutely right. I'm looking
mm-hmm.
at the map here, and I see where it is
yep.
right over the
yep.
right
we're in
over
Niagara
the
County, USA.
Yeah, right over the border there.
The
weather conditions, the climates, and all that. But tell us about what you face there on your farm.
Where we are is quite unique. We are very close to the lake, and so we benefit from that because it protects a great deal of our orchards. So we don't get as cold as other places do in the winter. We also don't get quite as hot in the summer. So our growing season is a cool, long growing season.
Uh-huh.
When you hear Niagara County, you often think that, well, if you're that close to Buffalo, you must get all the same snows as Buffalo. And we
right.
do not. We are just north of Buffalo. So where we are located, we see the snowstorms go south of us, and we see them go north of us along Lake Ontario and hit Watertown. We do get a lot of wind, but we don't have as much snow. And so actually what happens is in the springtime we end up irrigating an awful lot just to make up for the water loss.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
You would think that the location you are, that irrigation would not be that critical. That's amazing.
Oh, so irrigation is absolutely critical to our farm.
Wow. What type of soil do you have then that it doesn't...
Well, it's very sandy soil for one thing. We also hopscotch along Lake Ontario because we, in case of rain or hail, we want everything spread out. On our farm of the 600 acres, we grow mostly apples. We have tart cherries, sweet cherries, apricots, plums, pears, peaches, a few quince. So we do a lot of tree fruit, and each one has its own little market and its own little growing season for us.
The question then is that a big fruit-growing area there that furnishes fruit to area? Now,
We're the largest grower of maraschino cherries in the Northeast. We grow apples for Harry and David. We grow Red Delicious. So, yes, this is a major fruit-growing. We grow more peaches here than almost any other place other than, say, Georgia.
Wow.
Yes. Yep.
So originally I understand there was a great connection from that area there to New York City back on, for fruit going into New York City and stuff like that. But how big of an area? I know, we've been talking to the people up there and all that. I'm having a hard time picturing this little small Lake Ontario, Niagara County area being able to grow that much of everything.
Well, this actually is a major fruit-growing area. We started out as dairy farmers, actually, and you don't get cherry trees out of the road at 3 o'clock in the morning. So so we thought fruit might be a better alternative with a young growing family. At this point, our two boys are both college graduates, Kevin from Cornell, David from Purdue, and they work full-time on my husband's farm, and my daughter and daughter-in-law work for me. My younger son, David, is actually the one who has created and installed our entire irrigation system.
Wow.
Yeah. So we do a lot of that up here because, as I said, we just don't necessarily get quite as much snow that we can hold the moisture for long enough. In fact, all the rain you've heard of this area and how wet it's been, we've actually had a very dry summer here.
Wow. Speaking of rain and wet, did you get any effects from the hurricane that went through?
No, we just had some wind. But
that
no,
was
we
it.
Didn't. We were just far enough west, as far as the Finger Lakes, the edge of the Finger, eastern edge of the Finger Lakes, did get some rain from Hurricane Irene, but we did not.
Wow. Yeah. I called a bunch of wineries up in the Northeast there this afternoon, talking to them, and most everyone pretty much said that it was a lot of hype, but the event really didn't pan out as what they expected. So,
yeah.
And, you know, everyone was thrilled, but still, you know.
We still worry about the people in the Hudson Valley that are, you know, have some crops underwater and things.
Right. Yeah. I didn't get a hold of anyone in that area there. You know, most people said that it was just, you know, wasn't nearly what they expected it to be. Your summer highs and your winter lows, what temperature ranges do you go?
We rarely get below zero here in the wintertime. It doesn't get that hot. And for the most part, we're about 75 degrees in the summer. We do get a few days up to 85, a couple of 90s, but nothing that dramatic and not for that long.
Wow, that amazes me.
yeah, it's
you know, that
nice.
Really does. I just,
it's a great temperate season, so as a result, our fruit can get some wonderful size. It can be on the tree long enough to get some fabulous color, and as a result, makes wonderful wine.
Well, what time what temperatures do your summer lows usually drop into?
We get in the 60s.
Really? Okay, so it's cool enough to start concentrating a lot of sugar into that fruit then.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I am shocked. that one little area there, I never expected that. I mean, of all the places we've talked to in the last quite a few months here, I am surprised about some of the things. But that I think that one little area there surprises me more than anything else. It's just like a microclimate. We're always talking about microclimates for vineyards and stuff like that. And that's like a county-wide or just an area there, a microclimate that...
Yes, absolutely. And that's what we refer to it as well. Up here along the lake, there's it's a swath maybe a mile from Lake Ontario in mile and a half in some areas. But it's always fascinating that the farmers just, you know, 20 minutes south of us will have cherries in season and ripening, and we're usually about a week to 10 days behind them. But then our season will go on a little bit longer. Once they're done, we're still plodding along and getting more fruit.
Wow. Huh. How much do you have planted in fruit trees?
I think right now we have about 600 acres.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep. It goes between 500 and 600. This year we planted apples, and we planted some peaches and some cherries. But we have a whole system where we rotate the different fruits through.
And what, all the fruit come harvestable at the same time, or are they spread out over?
No, that's the fascinating thing about fruit, is apples are the longest season. Apples, you start taking care of them in April, but you don't harvest them mostly till October. We are starting to do a few of the early apples now. But we start on the 4th of July harvesting cherries. We start with sweet cherries, then we go into tart cherries. We then get a few peaches. Processing peaches early, and then we go into the regular peaches. At that point, the plums kick in, the apricots kick in. We're just starting some apples right now in September. The quince is sort of an oddball kind of thing, so we just have a few of those. But we do both the prune plums and the traditional Asian plums, European and Asian, and I actually make two different wines from those, and those are right now in full swing as well.
Wow.
And
you know,
we do have a lot of migrant workers who come through. We do a lot of hand picking. So we have some local people who have been with us for years and years, and then we just supplement for a little bit when we need to.
That's just, while you were saying that, I could just picture me with fruit on my table all the time.
Yep, you got it.
You know, it just sounds so good. I mean, you know, all that stuff just sounds, you know, fresh stuff like that on the table all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And part of our operation is a cold storage. So we do keep the fruit. And, yep. So, yeah.
As far as the government up there goes, how is the county, the state, friendly with your wines, unfriendly? You wish they would drop dead? You're happy and you love them? What?
Well, you know, every system has its glitches. My town and my county couldn't be happier. They are absolutely supportive of the wine trail and all the wineries. They do whatever they can to help us. And New York State itself actually is in the process of revamping and revising its laws to make it a little bit easier for us to do business as far as some of our, like, opening satellite stores and those kind of things. We do have shipping here, so I ship wine to about 25 to 30 states. We've been able to work through that system quite well. We actually self-deliver now to liquor stores. We're in 97 liquor stores across New York State, and we've only been open for 7 years. But that's my daughter handles all that. She's my wholesale rep. And so she just learned New York State system and learned how to work with it, and off we go.
Wow. That's just, you know, learning how to work with the system.
Mm-hmm.
Crystal, your daughter?
Crystal's my daughter-in-law, and Janet is my daughter.
Yeah, I just saw your email thing, Sarah, and I just saw the two names, and that's what I figured. I had a 50-50 chance to guess right, and I didn't.
Crystal is our events planner. She's the one who handles all the weddings and the Victorian teas and the murder mystery dinners and the other things that we do in conjunction with the winery.
Well, tell us more. Murder mysteries?
Yes.
How often do you have those, and what does that involve?
Well, what we do, instead of doing a plain old wine and food pairing dinner, we do a murder mystery wine and food pairing dinner. And we invite the infamous sommelier, Reese Ling, in to introduce each course and each wine. And in the meantime, the rest of us are running around trying to convince you that we didn't do the murder. So we've been on a cruise ship, and that nefarious attorney, Mason Perry, was murdered. We've had them, we've done them on the wine trail. We have about six or seven of them that we do. And each year we try to come up with something new and do probably about four or five a year. And then one of our best wine trail events actually is a murder mystery, where each winery has a character in the murder mystery, and over the course of the weekend you visit all the wineries, interview the characters, and vote for who you think did it. That's actually our wine trail event. And last year we had Glow White and the Seven Gnomes. And this year it's The Principal Is Not My Pal, and it's your 20th class reunion, and the high school principal gets murdered.
May I suggest a couple of people you can murder? we won't go there. That sounds like fun.
It is. And it's just a different way to present the wines. People get very relaxed. They get involved in the murder mystery, and then they try some wine combinations, especially with fruit wines that maybe they wouldn't have tried otherwise. And it's always fun to watch, you know, their taste buds pop when they, you know, try a ham dish with my dry cherry wine from the Balaton Cherry. It's just really neat experiences.
I can definitely see that combination, without a doubt. That sounds fascinating. You say you ship to different, how about Florida? Is that one of them?
Yes.
Is it?
Yes.
Cool.
Yep. Florida, California, Ohio, Pennsylvania. Those are probably our four big ones. We have a whole chart that we do when people are in the winery. Now, of course, with people not being able to take wine on the plane, we do ship it home for them as often as we can.
Right. Yeah, that's something I run across quite a bit, too. People, you know, I can get this, and I said, can't carry it. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep.
New rules. Mike, you have any questions?
I was just noticing all the awards that your wines have won over the past few years. It's really impressive. I couldn't find it again, but it's off the About Us page, and down at the bottom of the About Us page, you have some great pictures, and I just love the idea of it was formerly a 9,500 square foot mansion.
It is a 9,500 square foot mansion.
It is.
Yes.
Okay.
It was built by a family in the 1800s, the Merritt family. It was bought by a doctor of nervous diseases, the first director at the Buffalo Psych Center, in the late 1800s, and he was here till the early 1900s. It was the summer convent for the Sisters of St. Joseph, and then it was bought for a graphic design business, and then I bought it and turned it into the winery.
Oh, wow.
That's why you had the ghost.
That's right. We have five human and one canine spirit who like to visit us.
Does the canine chase the cats away? I saw also you have... how many cats do you have there?
We only have four right now.
Okay. I saw William Shakespeare.
Yes, William Shakespeare is our greeter.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yes, and okay. Some customers had moved, and their new landlord would not let them bring the cat, so they said, would you take him? And he moved himself in, and he escorts people from their car to the winery, and he expects a belly rub in return.
Oh, wow.
Which is why I have the Cat's Meow and Catapalooza wines.
Okay.
Fantastic.
Yeah, wow, that's a big place, though. 9,500.
Oh, yeah. 9,500, yeah.
Yes,
that's what I was looking at.
But we have a chapel, so we can do weddings inside. I have two tasting rooms and a third bar that's portable that we can put wherever we need it. So
wow.
On some of the busier weekends, we can really accommodate a lot of people.
Wow. Sounds like it. You know, 9,500 square feet, you can accommodate lots of people. You know?
Yes, we can.
yeah. No doubt.
But, yeah, you were noticing our awards. Our latest award was for something we called Cordially Yours. I took my sweet cherry wine, my Mount Morenci cherry wine, and we infused it with chocolate.
Ooh.
And we did it. Just got a silver medal at New York State Fair.
Congratulations.
Wow.
Yep, and that wine, we tried it. It was an experiment, so we only made 100 cases, and I sold out in 4 months.
Wow.
So. Now the cherries are done harvesting. I can try to talk my husband into selling me a few so that we can press them and start making some more wine.
So how do you mean you infused it with chocolate? You took a regular cherry wine and what did you do?
And it was a chocolate syrup, chocolate liqueur syrup, and my winemaker did that for me.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting.
Your winemaker, is he not a family member then?
No, he's not. No, uh-huh. Dominic Caricetti is my winemaker.
Uh-huh. How long has he been with you?
We've been together, 5-6 years now.
Wow, very good.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
Well, it sounds absolutely fascinating. I am really quite impressed. I am.
Thank you.
Some of the wines, I love your names. I just really, really do. Very, very creative on the names. That's great.
Well, you know, we have our Beatles tribute, Strawberry Dreams Forever. We have a Led Zeppelin tribute, Pear Way to Heaven. So.
that's great.
It's a different take on the wine business. We just try to have, I like to call it my agritainment for the day.
Yeah.
So they come in, they learn some local history, they learn about some interesting wines, and hopefully we have a few laughs together.
Well, that sounds very good. Sounds like a fascinating place. If I'm ever up there, that's definitely going to be on my itinerary.
We'd love to host you.
Yeah, I've been to Niagara Falls, but that was before I went around and started to do all this with wineries. I probably could have spent, you know, still be up there visiting wineries.
So, as I said, our wine trail didn't start until 1999. It opened with one winery, and as of last weekend, we are now up to 14.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And we have one winery that does mead and one winery that does sparkling wine, so we try to keep our own families and our own personalities and our own history, so every winery is a new experience.
And these are all, the trail is right on the Lake Ontario area.
Part
then,
of it
right?
is, yep, yep. Yeah. And, well, actually, we have, it's a very extensive trail. It covers not only along the lake, but along the escarpment as well.
Ah.
In the town of Cambria, you've got Niagara Landing, Eveningside, Freedom Run, Arrowhead, Honeymoon Trail, they're all up in that area. We've got some ones a little bit southwest of me, Leonard Oaks Estate and Viscara Vineyards. And then there's the whole group of us up here along the lake, Chateau Niagara, Black Willow, Schulze, Victoriansburg, and then the newest one is Gust of Sun.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
I saw also on your website, I'm just browsing the news and notes on TV, it says... it was on the Travel Channel, one of the most terrifying places in America.
That's correct. That is absolutely correct. Yep. And that's one of our activities, actually, is that we do ghost hunts on a regular basis, and we had a local newscaster come in and film some of them.
Oh, my gosh.
So, we have some interesting occurrences here.
Yeah, not to you know, devaluate or to turn people away. It's just, you know, because you have great sounding wines, you have award winning wines, and then I go to this page and it's like most terrifying places in America. You know,
mm-hmm.
like, so
it's
just, you know, travel.
Yeah.
So
so you'll have to check that out on YouTube.
Yeah, I see that. I see you have quite a few videos on there. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very interesting. So there you go. Does it get? Because of that, does it get really busy during October, or is it not? Is it
It's busy whenever we want it to be busy. October is our busiest month with the ghost hunts, and
yeah.
we have a number of weddings and the wine trail events. But really, we're open year-round, and we get people coming through really no matter what the weather.
Yeah, I was going to ask that also because, I mean, being up there in that type of weather, I mean, granted, doesn't affect you that area personally as much as it does the outer areas, but do you see any kind of, you know, change with that, and do you change your hours because we've talked to a lot of places that during the wintertime they're only open, some of them are just open like Monday or, you know, maybe a Saturday, Sunday at you know, at the most, but it doesn't seem like it affects you.
No, I close 5 days a year, basically, or 4 days a year, Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, and Easter. Otherwise,
wow.
that, it's Monday through Saturday, 10 to 6, Sundays, noon to 6.
Wow. Okay. That's that's some good hours.
It is.
Wow.
And we're always here to tell the ghost story and, you know, share the wine.
Okay.
Someone needs to get there right at 10 o'clock so they can listen all day long, because it sounds like you could probably take up their whole day telling them stories.
Yep, and everybody who works my bar learns to tell the story, and we all tell it a little bit differently, so you get the next the next shift, and there's a new story.
Fantastic. It sounds like an absolutely fascinating place. Like I say, that's one place I have to definitely put on our itinerary if we're ever up in that area. Margo, thank you very much for your time. We really appreciate it. Before we leave, I want you to give us all the information about your winery, the website, the address, phone numbers, Facebook, whatever you have, so people, if they would like, could get in touch with you or check you out.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. The website is www.marjimmanor.com. We're on Facebook as the Winery at Marjim Manor, and I also tweet as Margo Sue. Our phone is area code 716-778-7001. And if you link through to the website or anything else, you'll get the full calendar of our various events, our private events, our wine tasting, a little bit of some descriptions, and a look at some of our fascinating labels.
Yeah, definitely.
It sounds great. It really does. And thank you so much for taking the time to be with us tonight. And we'll definitely tell people about you, and best of luck to you on your adventures at the winery at Marjim Manor.
Thank you so much. I've enjoyed it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yep. Good night.
Bye now.
Okay.
Oh, sorry. I just put you on. I just put you in the green room for a second. I hit the wrong button.
Stop hitting the buttons.
I know. Keep my hands off the controls. Yeah. I know.
I looked at that and I go, oh, well, that was pretty good. I had the applause going. All of a sudden the applause stopped, and I said, oh, the bus people are getting. And then that's when I heard you say something about, oh, I put you in the green room.
Yeah.
I go, oh.
I didn't hear you.
Nobody
heard you.
There's a ghost operating my little switchboard over
here. Switchboard, yeah.
It's pretty good.
That was fantastic. That's an interesting winery. That really is. It's And
yeah,
it sounds like Margo really enjoys what she does and just has a good time with it and all that. So.
Oh, yeah. And the names are very, very clever on the names.
I love that. That's all sorts of cute names there.
Yep. Very
cool.
Well,
I'm going to let you leave us for a second here and go get a hold of Robin.
Yep.
And we get our next speaker, our next guest, I should say, not speaker. There are more guests than there are speakers. Our next guest is Robin Ross from Arrowhead Springs Vineyard. And Arrowhead Springs Vineyard is actually not too far from the winery we just talked to there. The winery at Marjim Manor, Arrowhead Springs Vineyard, is only about, I don't know, I think about, 12, 15 miles at the most from that. So very close. And we're going to get Robin on the phone, and Robin's going to tell us about the winery and what they do and all that. So it looks like Robin's with us. Not quite. Mike's still sitting there trying to get a hold of her, and she's not on yet. So while we are waiting for Robin to join us, I do want to tell you a couple of things. Oh, here we are. Robin's just about ready. She's in. Let's bring on Robin. You there with us?
Yes, I am.
Well, thank
you,
for joining us. I'm glad you were able to take your time to join us on All About Wine tonight. So, Arrowhead Springs Vineyard, tell us about it.
Well, we're located in western New York on the Niagara Escarpment. We grow six types of grapes, Merlot, Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, Chardonnay, Malbec, and Syrah. And we also bring in grapes from other farms and produce about 4,000 cases of wine a year.
Wow. How many acres do you have that you grow there?
We have 7 acres under vine. We have 8,000 vines planted on that. And the acreage itself produces somewhere between 27 and 32 tons. Of course, that depends on the growing season.
Right. But how many, 7 acres and how many vines?
That's 8,000 vines. Our rows are 8 feet wide, and the plants are spaced every 4.5 feet. So we're fairly tight planting.
That was going to be my next question, because the vineyard, down here, we don't really put them that close. 4.5 feet is awful close, it would seem.
Well, we use a Scott Henry trellis, and that trellising system is a little bit taller, and we train the canopy both up and down. Well, of course, the particular vines we grow prefer growing upwards, so we spend some time training half of the vineyard more or less to grow downward so that the vines overlap every other rooting cane. And that gives us a nice panel of green leaves to provide photosynthesis to ripen the grapes. So we're able to ripen more fruit and produce a little bit more on the same amount of acreage.
I see. Okay. I did, and you mentioned how many vines you had for that acreage. I was thinking, wow, it seems like you would have problems, but the way you have it trellised, it opens it up so you can get yourself a nice crop there. That's interesting. You don't do any fruit wines or anything then?
No, we only grow vinifera, and we do bring one hybrid in for our ice wine. That would be the Vidal Blanc. But no, we don't do any fruit wines.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, a lot of people up in that area do, and that's why I was asking about that. You do an ice wine, I noticed. I was looking at your list here. You do a couple of different ice wines. We talked to a lady who does almost exclusive ice wines. Is there a market that handles all that up there? I mean, is ice wine something you do every year, and is it something that there's a big enough market for it for so many people that are up there doing it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, certainly our climate allows for it to be done every year. We have cool enough climate in the wintertime that we can reach the required 17 degrees Fahrenheit for 8 consecutive hours before we do any picking. And, of course, the grapes are picked at those cold temperatures, 17 Fahrenheit or colder, and also pressed outside at that temperature. So we do have the climate for it every year. And secondarily, yeah, there does seem to be a market, not only locally with local wine drinkers, but also we're not too far from Niagara Falls, New York, maybe a 30-minute drive, which hosts probably 4 million visitors every year, and a lot of the international community loves the ice wine.
Yeah, well, yeah. Oh, yeah. Once people discover it, it's something that they remember. It's always fascinates me because people come into the winery down here all the time, to my winery, and always try to work into a conversation ice wine every chance they get, because they're trying to catch people not knowing about it, and they knew. I've been to New York and I've had ice wine, and so it's always fun to listen to them. You use what grapes, Vidal, primarily?
Yeah, for the ice wine we use the Vidal Blanc. You have to pick a grape that ripens a little bit later if it was, for example, to be harvested in the fall, because you don't want it to become so ripe that it rots and falls from the vine. So the idea is that it has to hang on through harvest, and then, of course, throughout the fall and winter, and then it's picked, generally speaking, in January. So there are not every varietal would work for that, because not everything has such a long growing season.
The classic German ice wine, the Rieslings, I'm surprised that you're not putting that as an ice wine.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's another prime candidate, and it is growing in the area for ice wine. But currently we're making ours out of the Vidal Blanc, and we actually have one that will be bottled this year that was made with Cabernet Franc.
Oh, wow. That just seems so odd. Cabernet Franc is usually rather dry. What your residual sugar at bottling is what on that?
Oh, it'll be somewhere up around 20.
Wow.
It'll be quite, but don't forget, when it's harvested in January, of course, the brick count's going to be closer to 40 than the typical 22 to 24 that we harvest in the fall. So after fermentation, we still have quite a lot of residual sugar, and it has a distinctive Cabernet Franc, but of course, it's quite sweet.
Yeah, a Cabernet Franc ice wine, that sounds fascinating. it really does. What are the, I know you mentioned this, but what are your vineyards planted in and acreage? How many of each of the wines you have?
Well, the largest planting that we have would be the Cabernet Franc, and that's somewhere between 3.5 to 4 acres. And then, I think we have probably about 1.5 acres of Syrah and maybe 1 acre of Merlot, a couple acres of the Cab Sauv, and a very small planting of Malbec.
Oh,
of course, we have a pretty good-sized planting of Chardonnay. My acreage blocks might not all add up to 7, so you'll have to excuse me on that. I think of them in terms of rows, but our rows aren't all the same length out there. But the largest planting we have would definitely be Cabernet Franc. I would say it probably accounts for 25% of our vineyard.
Wow. I love a good Cabernet Franc. You don't see a lot of the Cabernet Franc out there that people just to make. I noticed you use barrels on it. What oak are you using? Where are you getting your oak?
Well, we're using both American oak and French oak, and actually a little bit of Eastern European as well. With the Cabernet Franc, we tend to use American oak. The Cabernet Franc grape itself is strong and it's hardy, and it stands up to the American oak, which tends to be a little bit more forceful, perhaps, than the French oak. We do use French oak, however, we do a Pinot Noir on French oak as well as a Chardonnay. And we have some Eastern European oak as well that we use. Sometimes it could be that a certain grape is in more than one type of barrel, and then at blending time we do maritage blends as well.
Uh-huh.
My husband Duncan's the winemaker. He'll account for the different flavors that the barrels are putting forth, and he tries to keep the flavor profile consistent year to year for our two prime meritage blends, which are Arrowhead Red and our Reserve Meritage.
Uh-huh. You say American oak. Where are you getting your oak, American oak?
Well, we've been using a cooperage called Keystone Cooperage, although this year I guess they decided to no longer make barrels for the U.S. market. There are a couple other cooperages. Yeah, so we're on a barrel hunt. But there's another American cooperage by the name of Canton. And we did just get a new shipment of barrels in, and I don't recollect the name of the cooperages on them, but I know that we've been looking for different barrels pretty aggressively for the last several weeks because, of course, it's harvest time. And it's time to get all the barrels primed and ready and ready to accept this year's crop.
These barrels are out of New York then, mostly New England area?
Several of them, but again, we do use French oak and some Eastern European as well.
Yeah, there's just to pass it on to you, a lot of people we've talked to, a lot of wineries over the last few months have been using Minnesota oak, and they're praising the Minnesota oak and the flavors and the taste that those are coming out and how well the barrels hold up and all that. That's why I was wondering what you were using.
No,
but
I'm primarily Pennsylvania and New York oak for the American oak, but uh-huh. I'll have to bear that in mind. It could be an exciting experiment to use some of the Minnesota oak as well.
Yeah, a lot of wineries are saying that they just absolutely love it. It's getting some great reviews and some praises from the people I've talked to. So I don't know, just FYI, you might check it out. And I don't know what they're charging. I don't know any more about it, but except for the fact that I'm hearing lots of good stuff about the oak coming out of Minnesota. So,
wonderful.
Yeah, it's something to look at. What where you are right there? You say you're just east of the escarpment?
We're actually sitting right on the Niagara Escarpment.
Are you? Okay. Tell us about the weather with the escarpment and the influence of the escarpment on the weather where you are.
Well, we're on the Niagara Escarpment, and we're probably about 8 or 9 miles south of Lake Ontario. Lake Ontario, of course, is one of the larger of the Great Lakes, And because of the size of that body of water, it acts in a way as a heat sink. What that means for us is that it extends our fall season, and we actually carry foliage on our vineyard through mid-November, which gives us a longer time to ripen some of the longer ripening varietals such as Cabernet Sauvignon and Cabernet Franc. And then because of the play of the weather between both the escarpment and Lake Ontario in the spring, we also have a bit of an advantage as far as frost protection goes. The escarpment itself, the height of it above the lake, provides some sort of an airfoil action, and air movement comes down the vineyard. And, of course, with air movement, frost really can't settle on the leaves, so that gives us a lot of protection in the spring as the plants go into budding.
Uh-huh. So when do you get your last frost then?
Oh, of the spring?
Yes.
Oh, sometimes, well, gosh, I was thinking in terms of vegetable gardens, for example. You can't plant a vegetable garden if you're worried about frost, and I typically plant our vegetables the first week of May. So sometime in April, I guess. Although it's different on the escarpment than it is closer to the lake and the flatlands in between. And also, if there's a frost locally, for example, there could be a frost a mile or two to the north of us, but because we're on the escarpment, the air movement doesn't allow for the frost to settle onto the leaves, and we don't accumulate any damage.
Wow. So that escarpment really does make for quite a bit of a microclimate along it then.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
Oh, I visited some wineries on the Canadian and American side off the escarpment a few years ago, and I was fascinated by the difference that the escarpment made, especially some of them on the Canadian side that were built right on the slope of the escarpment, and they said that the season really is extended just because the air flows like a buffer over the top of them, and it doesn't give them that cold air coming out of the west. So,
yeah, that's right, and that's the case with our vineyard as well. I'm actually sitting outside tonight, not too far from the vines themselves, and probably just 100 yards off where the cliffs climb on the escarpment. Now, our vineyard starts right as the bottom of the escarpment ends and extends northward down a fairly significant slope. I mean, you know, nothing too difficult, but they do provide nice air drainage. And the air drainage helps us, of course, not have any frost issues and frost pockets. And the other way that the escarpment helps us is in the winter with the very cold temperatures. This winter, for example, we had some of our colder weather that Western New York has seen in a long time. I remember a particular morning when in the vineyard on the farm, our temperature reached -3 Fahrenheit, which is one of the coldest days I can recollect it ever getting here. But
Wow. That
wasn't so bad as just above us. At the top of the escarpment, about 2 or 3 miles to the south of us, the temperature was -12 degrees Fahrenheit, which, of course, is in the danger zone for vines. So
right.
We're very lucky that the escarpment provided a nice protection against winter freeze damage as well.
Huh. That's interesting. It really is quite interesting. Arrowhead Spring Vineyards, where'd the name come from and how long y'all been there?
Well, we bought this land in 2003 primarily to start the winery business. The name itself came from the first time we went to get a building permit for our barn. And I went to check with the town about getting my permit and was told, well, you really can't build on your land. There's some sort of Indian something there. And after a little bit of research, yes, we realized that there was an ancient Indian tool-making site at the front of the property where the road goes through that was discovered as the highway was put in the 1970s. And it turned out that it really wasn't the problem building here. We checked with the local university, UB's Department of Archaeology. Dr. Pirelli wrote a letter to us and to the town and the New York Department of Antiquities saying that, you know, a winery and vineyard and farm would be an excellent use of the land, and we know where the site is. We don't ever disturb it. So that was how the name Arrowhead came. As we were putting the vineyard in, we discovered that there are springs rampant on our hillside, and we, in fact, in spite of the fact that we're on a hillside, we have 30,000 feet of drain tile draining the water from the vineyard. And that's just because of the escarpment, up above us there's a plateau more or less, so of course the water tables, when we get a lot of water in the spring, the hydrostatic pressure pushes water out our hillside, so the drain tile is necessary. And of course the vineyard's portion of our name is very self-explanatory.
So the you don't have to. Well, that is your irrigation then.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's been very helpful to us. Though this year we had a bit of a dry spell, 6 weeks of intense rain followed by 6 weeks of dryness. And we did run a hose out there a little bit, but the vines really weren't showing any water pressure so much as Japanese beetle pressure, and we wanted to reinitiate leaf growth to account for the insect damage. But, yeah, I would say the springs are quite helpful in maintaining a healthy vineyard.
Wow, yeah. I was thinking about that, and I forgot what my question was going to be there. So you're part of the Niagara AVA, the Niagara Escarpment AVA, then?
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Good. Good. You're dealing with the government, state and federal. Good, bad, indifferent. You wish they dropped dead. You're happy and you could hug them. What is your opinion of it?
Well, I find that in New York State, one of the toughest things about starting a winery would be licensing through the state. The federal license we actually didn't have any problem with, but the state was a little bit more tricky to work with. Nonetheless, we soldiered through it and got ourselves licensing. I think one of the second issues that people have been having, and probably on a national level, is actually getting labels approved recently with the TTV. But my understanding is that they're going to come up with some sort of uniform template for labels that will make it easier and faster to get labels approved, and I think that's important to the wine industry. We want to be able to turn our wines around and have them on the shelf, and this generates not only revenues for the winery, but tax revenues for the state and nation, and I think it's important to remember that this nation was founded on small businesses such as ours, and these monies are important for all of us.
That's very true. I couldn't agree more. And, yes, I heard the same thing, too, that the licensees were going to come up with a template. You can do everything online, and so let's hope it happens. How about shipping? Where do you ship to? Who do you ship to?
Typically, we have customers that will visit us or stop by the winery and then ask us to ship. And as you know, many states in the nation have different laws regarding shipping. There are certain states we cannot ship into that absolutely do not allow it. I would like to see a situation where we could ship without any special permits to any state in the nation. We are one nation, and it would be nice not to have all the separate laws, permits, and special fees that apply. It makes it a little bit difficult to do business, if not a little bit tricky for smaller businesses such as ours, to be able to keep track of all the laws required to ship out of state.
And it is ridiculous, and it changes constantly. You know. Mike, do you have any questions?
I was going to ask usually about the barrels, and we got that done. I'm just looking at the photos. They're the main part of your website. Those photos on the top part of the screen are just amazing. I'm good. I noticed y'all have some award-winning wines as well, and you've won quite a few good awards on that with your wine. So I'm good to go for. Yeah.
Your hours are year round, Robin. Year round there.
More or less, we're open 12 to 6 daily from May 1st through December 31st, and Saturdays and Sundays throughout January, February, March, and April. We're open year round, but the weekends only, and some of the winter weeks. That may change in the future, but for now, that's when I do my vineyard pruning and.
Uh-huh.
You have to leave time for that as well.
That is a full-time job, yes.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Well, very good. Thank you so much for your time. Before you leave, please give us all the information on Arrowhead Spring Vineyards, email address, phone numbers, contact information, everything. So if anybody out there listening would like to get in touch with you, they will have all they need to get in touch with you.
Okay. Well, the easiest way to find out anything about us is to visit our website, www.arrowheadspring.com. If you have specific questions, you can email us, info@arrowheadspring.com. Our phone number here is 716-434-8030. 530, and we're also available on Facebook. And in fact, our Facebook is probably where we post most often. So please join us on our page on Facebook.
Fantastic.
Yep.
In fact, I just clicked on your Facebook here. Let's see what it says. Oh, there's all sorts of stuff on there too. Great. Lots of pictures and stuff on Facebook page and everything. So good. Yeah, people get on that and they can discover a whole bunch of stuff. I love the Facebook pages. They're really really interesting. All right. Well, thank you very much, Robin. We appreciate your time tonight. It was fantastic. We're up in that area. We will definitely stop by and check you out. And if anyone else of our listeners is, I'm sure they will too.
Well, thanks so much for having us on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right.
Wow. Yeah, I was just looking. Man, those pictures are amazing. I mean,
they are.
View,
yeah.
The view and everything. The rolling hills. The
winter snow sitting there.
That's amazing. I just love this time of year. Anyway, I was going to say that in the beginning of the show, but I was thinking, we're at September already. You know, we're in that downhill slope towards winter. You know, our 2 weeks of winter, and we get down into the 40s. And and I'm like, we're on that slope now. It's all the summer's getting over with. We're done, and it's going to start getting cool and everything. And then I go to my car and it's like 97 degrees, and we're not quite there yet. It's not.
I open up the door in the morning to go out and get the newspaper, and it just the humidity knocks me back inside another 2 feet.
You can't do anything still. I mean, the humidity is incredible. It's like, okay, we're done. Thank you. So we're not quite there yet, but it's getting there. And then I hear these others, the ones in the Northeast we're talking to, and when who was it? Margo said, really rarely gets below zero. I'm thinking, are you kidding me?
I know. And we talked to two or three of them in that area there, and they said it just zero is unusual. This is upstate New York. I mean, for heaven's sakes, you would think that they would be hitting 20 below,
Yeah, that's just amazing.
It is. It's absolutely amazing. Well, before we go any further, I want to cover something here. As everybody knows, last week we had a hurricane. Mm-hmm. Move its way up the coast of the United States and settled in right along the coast and fly right on I forgot the name. Tell me.
Irene.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was thinking Eileen, and I knew that wasn't right. Irene. Mm-hmm. Irene went up the coast and settled in on set its sights on the Northeast, and they were predicting all sorts of bad things up there and heavy rains and flooding and all sorts of bad stuff. So I was curious how Irene affected everyone out there. So I started to call different wineries, and I called Vermont first, Lincoln Peak Vineyard. I talked to a girl by the name of Sarah Granstrom up there, and she was telling me that it really didn't affect them too much. The winery is located we haven't been to Vermont yet on our show, obviously, since we're going alphabetically, but she said that they're just north of Middlebury in Vermont, which is south of lake and rivers that run down through there and all that area to the west. And she said there's a little microclimate there. She said that hardly any rain. They got a little bit of wind. She said no damage or anything. She talked to other vineyards and wineries around the state. And she said it's overall, they went through it with no problems. Everything was really quite normal, if you want to look at a hurricane as being normal. But she said it just nothing that was really causing any problems or anything. She said a lot of hype, but not a lot of damage. I then jumped over to New Hampshire, and I called Bob at Candia Vineyards. And we had talked to Bob earlier. Bob was one of our guests.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a hold of Bob, and much to his credit, he remembered me, and I asked him how it was going there. And he said they got about 3 inches of rain, They're located southeast of Concord in New Hampshire, and northeast of Manchester. So that, you know, pretty much puts it in there. But he said they got 3 inches of rain, not a lot of wind. He said a few trees got knocked over, and there was he ordered some floodings in different areas, but nothing that was really devastating, nothing that was really major problems. He said that heard that a few areas had some flooding, but no vineyards that he recalls hearing about that had any flooding or any problems. And so he said they recovered and, you know, made it through it really quite well. Massachusetts. I called Coastal Vineyards in Massachusetts, talked to Linda there. And Linda said that they got about 2 inches of rain was all. Now, let me tell you where this is located, okay? It is just east, just outside of New Bedford, Massachusetts. And this is way down right by the water. This is just, you know, I mean, right on the Atlantic Ocean, just, you know, just in the bottom corner of Massachusetts there. And she said they got some saltwater spray in the vineyards. It killed some leaves. They had a little bit of problem with that, but not anything devastating. Everybody I talked to in that area said that they're not harvesting yet. The plants are very heavy with fruit, and they're not quite ready to harvest. They're still looking anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks before they harvest. But the rains and the winds didn't hurt anything as far as damage to the plants or any of that stuff. So it was so they all recovered and went through everything quite well. Next, I talked to Abby at Greenville Vineyards in Rhode Island. Again, another one we haven't been to. This is Greenville Vineyards is located in Portsmouth, Rhode Island. Just down close to the water all around them and everything. Abby said that they got about 1 inch of rain, nothing more than that. There was some wind, but it wasn't nearly as bad as they anticipated or thought it was going to be, which is the general consensus from everyone that I talked to. Everyone said that it was nearly not as bad as what they had prepared for or what they had thought it was going to be. And so it was really worked out quite well as far as that goes. Went to Connecticut and called Marianne at Govia Vineyards in Connecticut. And Govia Vineyards is located, and I'm trying to delay here so I can pull it up and tell you exactly where it's located. Govia Vineyards is located in the just about in the middle of Connecticut. It is southern part of Connecticut, south of Manchester and Hartford, New Britain, all that area, and just north of the eastern end of Long Island. So this also brings in, you know, Long Island and what they've got there. And she said that they got about 3 inches of rain, a little bit of wind. Not real bad. I asked her if she had heard of any other wineries in Connecticut having any problems. She said not that she had heard of. Everyone seemed to make it through okay, and there was no problems or anything. Then I called Renault Winery. Renault Winery is located in New Jersey, and I figured, you know, it's I asked how what was happening there in the rains and winds and all that stuff, since I was not getting any bad weather or anything further north, so I thought I'd drop down further south and see what happened, because, you know, obviously it might have hit south and harder. So went to Renault Winery, talked to Paul, who is the manager at Renault Winery, and asked him if there was any problems or anything there, and he said that they got about 4.5 inches of rain. He said it wasn't serious, though, because they needed the rain. It hasn't been real wet, and so it didn't really hurt them. Renault Vineyard and Winery is located north west of Atlantic City, and the city that they're located in is Egg Harbor, New Jersey. If you're familiar with that, just pretty close to a harbor that comes in. And he said that some big trees got blown down and some old trees and stuff that had been around. But as far as damage goes, he said there wasn't any. He said what that did happen to him, he said, and that just made him sick, was they have been promoting a great big weekend, a grape stomp weekend.
Oh,
he
said
they invited vineyards, five other vineyards, to come and join them and set up there and sell their wines and taste their wines. He said it was a whole weekend event. He said they were going to go Saturday and Sunday. He said they spent about $8,000 on advertising leading up to it and everything, and they had to cancel it because of the hurricane.
Mm.
He said, so Sunday, September the 11th is the new date. They just moved it to one day. So Sunday, September 11th, which will be a week from this Sunday. So anybody listening, anybody in that area, they are going to have a grape stomp at Renault Winery in New Jersey. So it's something to check out. There'll be other wineries there. It'll be a big event. They've got all sorts of activities going on. So check it out. But they couldn't do the whole weekend event because hurricane stopped that. So he said that was the biggest problem of anything. I also talked to a couple of wineries and called people in New York. The two I got a hold of were busy. They were able to answer a couple of quick questions. I asked them how the weather was, and they said there was no problems, a little bit of rain. Some people said that most of the damage in New York was in Hudson, in the Hudson Valley. He said there was one person said there was some flooding in Hudson Valley, but nobody said that they had any vineyard damage or anything that resulted in any problems. And the harvest will be going on as scheduled and as planned within the next 2, 3, 4 weeks, depending on where you are. So that's what happened with the hurricane. So
yeah, wow, good, good follow up on because we were talking about them, and then in between last show and this show, Hurricane Irene roared through, and we just want to make sure everybody did well. Did you see? New York City Mayor Bloomberg he's on one of the news channels. It was like the day of or the day after when it moved out of New York City, and they were the people of New York City were criticizing him for, ordering the evacuations and clearing all the people out, and then it wasn't that, to them it wasn't that big a deal, and he was making statements like, if they do something like that, they get criticized for it, but if they don't do anything and then, all hell breaks loose, then they get criticized for that. And he says, I would rather be criticized for doing something and getting the people out of harm's way, and then it doesn't do anything, than to not say anything, and then have all this go down, and, then people's lives are, at stake at that point, because, they basically say, oh, it's not going to do that much to it, and then all of a sudden everything happens.
Right.
And he was defending, his decision that, people were criticizing him so much about it right after this, went through, and it was kind of like, it's not that big a deal, but you never know with these things. I mean,
you don't,
you don't want to play with them either. I mean, if I could have stayed home for a whole week that week, even though it was on the other coast of Florida, I would have done it. But I'm just saying.
Yeah, but hey, you like to play with the computer and stuff. So that
yeah, that's true. I would have found something. Wow. Okay. Excellent show. And I guess we'll go ahead and wrap it up, unless you have anything else to follow up. What are we covering next week? We have a show
going to the Finger Lakes.
Oh, okay.
Finger Lakes is a big area, and there's lots of old wineries there.
Yeah.
Finger Lakes basically runs between I-81 on the west, or on the east, rather, over to – well, actually, it probably goes a little bit further than that. I'm not sure. Over to State Road 15 on the west, so it covers all the lakes there and everything else. So we are going to the Finger Lakes, and we – depends on what time of response, we may be spending a couple of weeks there too, because
yeah,
there's lots of wineries there.
It's pretty much would you say it's close to the Napa Valley of that area, the Northeast, or is it not
quite
that big?
Yeah, pretty much so. Yeah, there's and they've got some great wineries, a lot of small wineries, a lot of boutique wineries in that mm-hmm. area. Some great wines coming out of there. I've had some of those in that area, in the Finger Lakes area.
Really enjoyed them. They're making some beautiful wines. Not to take anything away from the people we've already talked to in all the other areas.
Obviously.
It sounds fascinating everywhere, but the Finger Lakes is the one. Whenever anyone speaks of New York wineries, Finger Lakes is always the name brought up. So we will be visiting that next week and maybe for a couple of weeks. So.
Okay. So join us next Thursday. That would be September, almost at August. That'll be September the 8th. At 7 p.m., I'm entitled to. I just pulled up the calendar too, and I don't know why I read that wrong. September the 8th at 7 p.m. Eastern time, and for All About Wine, and we'll start on the Finger Lakes, and who knows how long it's going to run for, depending on what our response is. So far, it's been really good. I'm really shocked by everybody that's been on the show. Anyway, we'll go ahead and close out the show now, unless anybody has anything, any calls or anything, last minute, nothing on there. Okay.
No calls.
So we'll go ahead and close the show for now. And
thank you all for listening again.
Yeah. Thank you. And a little, shout out real quick to, Florida Estates Winery, where, Ron is hailing from, and his, local producer there as well. Florida Estates Winery is local to us, so if you're in our radio listening area, we're not on the air.
No, that could be the whole country.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, you know what? Jump on a plane and come on down. It's located.
Anytime.
You can land at Land O'Lakes International Airport. a big, bustling, busy airport served by a couple of Fords and. I think a couple of Chevys run through there. Anyway, located at 25241 State Road 52, 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Zip code is 34639. For those of you with GPSs that require that for some reason, the zip code is 34639. That is, if you go on Interstate 75, go to exit 285 and go west about 4 miles, and you'll see the signs for Florida Estates Winery. If you're coming from the other side of, like in Clearwater in that area, or what else is up there, Hudson, Holiday,
Tarpon Springs.
From US 19, you are 21 miles east of US 19 on State Road 52, or 10 and a half miles east from the Suncoast Parkway, which is our great toll road up in that area. So, and actually, it goes all the way to the airport. So there you go. You land at Tampa International Airport, and you jump on the Suncoast Parkway. Unless it's like midnight or something.
And we won't be there.
That's true.
Drive slow.
Real slow. Or just catch it during rush hour and you won't have any you know, say-so in the matter. You'll be driving slow anyway.
You'll be driving slow anyway.
Yeah, just go north on the Suncoast and get off of the State Road 52 exit and go east about 10 and a half miles. Real simple. Nice area. It's out in the countryside. So you take a nice country drive on State Road 52. It's great. And a great place to hang out. And being underneath those oak trees, it's just wonderful. And, of course, sample some wines. Buy some products. You have a nice gift shop there. And it's just great. And you don't have any wine fest this weekend. So
not this weekend, no. Monday's a holiday. We will be open on the holiday. So.
See, that's another thing. You're closed major holidays, well, most major holidays, open daily. I mean, you can't beat that. It's 11 a.m. until 6 p.m. every day except the major holidays, and you're going to be open this Monday. That's great.
That's right.
That's wonderful.
We don't close when it gets cold in the winter. We stay open then, too.
That's right. That's right. And cold, of course, by our standards is, 60 or, 40
55
to 60. 55, yeah, there you go. For more information on Florida Estates Winery, give them a call at area code 813-996-2113. That's area code 813-996-2113, and that is a toll-free call if you're in the 813 area code. For more information, look for them on the internet at www.floridaestateswines.com, floridaestateswines.com for more information, and also sign up for their really cool newsletter. Really enjoy reading that, and everything about it's just from the top down. You just want to read the whole thing, so definitely check that out. And if you want to email the show, Ron would love to hear from you. If you have any questions or suggestions, any kind of feedback about All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio, you can email Ron, the wondrous, informative show host for allaboutwine101@gmail.com. allaboutwine101@gmail.com. And he'll either answer you there, or hopefully we'll have some question and answers from that on one of our shows. So definitely call, contact them, and visit the winery if you're in the area. And even if you're not in the area, visit them, you know, and check them out on the internet as well, on the web. And we'll see you all. I guess that'll do it for tonight. And thank you to our guests, Margo and Robin, from up in that in the area.
yeah.
And we appreciate your supporting the program by your appearance and everything. And it was a great time and very informative, as always, right here on All About Wine. And join us on Facebook. And links are also, I believe, on the website. So check it out. Right. Thank you, Ron. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Archive Live, or however we go. And we'll see you all on September the 8th at 7 p.m. And we'll start on the Finger Lakes area. So thank you,
Lock. New York. Thank you all. Night now.
We should have like a closing theme song or something. You know.
Yeah, I know. A little closing there. So, yeah.
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 Got to do something.
Yeah. Are we, you know, it's always.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say. That's what we have now.
That's what we have now. That's the end of our show. That's
You'll hear that.
Thanks,
hear
everyone,
that.
For listening. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thank you.